Thank you, young people. What a blessing that was. I wanted to do something before I forget it. And Missionary Peterson, could you identify yourself for me? I thought that was you. All right. What is your relationship to Mike Peterson?
I'm his son. He's my dad.
I thought you might be. Your father and mother and your aunt and uncle from Florida went with us to Israel, you know, 1 year. When we got to know them in Poland, and then, so there you are now. Praise the Lord. God bless you. I'm glad to meet you. And thank the rest of you for us allowing us that little moment of fellowship. Wanted to make sure before you got away. I watched you during the Sunday school hour, and I meant to see you during the break. But what a blessing that trip was. Well, we're going to continue to talk this morning about this matter of gospel conversation. And I want you, if you would please, to turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 4 one more time. Pardon me. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more. In 1 Peter chapter 4, the writer is explaining some things to us about how we are to respond to difficult circumstances and pressures and problems. And if there was ever a day when we were facing things like that, it would have to be today. But, of course, the church has faced persecution and difficulty, and free people and godly people have gone through hardships and turmoil since sin entered into this creation. And it will continue, no doubt, until the Savior of the world comes and sets it all right. He has come already and presented the gospel, which is what men need more than anything else that they could ever learn about. But in the meantime, we are here and struggling as a country and as a world. And these are difficult days and days of uncertainty for so many people. There's a statement that's being made here in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7 and following, that sort of sets the tone for us today. My first pastor, when I got saved, I was in the military. I was overseas, and when I came back, of course, one of the first things I did was seek a Bible-believing church where I could learn and grow. And the Lord led us to a church. I was stationed at Myrtle Beach Air Force Base. Some real rough duty there. But at any rate, we were there for a number of years and met a pastor there who introduced me to Bob Jones University. And the rest is history. I never, ever intended to stay in Greenville, but I did, and I'm still there. Lord willing, I'll be there from now on. But at any rate, Tom Harper was my pastor, and he preached a message on 1 Peter one night, and my, what a blessing it was to me. And I'll never forget how he introduced his sermon that night. Just a homespun, easygoing fellow that had such wisdom. And he said, now let's get something straight here right at the beginning. He said, there are five things in 1 Peter that the devil doesn't want you to know. Well, I want to write that down, you know, get those things down right now. What are these five things that the devil doesn't want me to know? He said, here they are. Chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, 4, and 5. And his point was that there are all kinds of helpful things in 1 Peter that we need to learn and live and master in our lives. And one of the reasons that this book is so helpful to people is because it deals with the crises that we have to deal with in life. And he tells us here in chapter 4 and verse 7, but the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And what the writer is telling us is that sometimes we get a report about life here on earth with the difficulties and struggles that we have to go through, and we are not really prepared to respond in the way that we should. But when we hear these words that the end of all things is at hand, we have to know how to respond to it. The ultimate purpose, the ultimate prophetic purpose of God in the work of men is upon us. And here we are, no doubt rapidly approaching the end times, and yet people have had that anticipation and expectation now since Peter himself wrote it down. So we have to be very careful that we don't try to interpret the Bible in the light of current events, but rather interpret current events in the light of the Bible and the promises that God has given to us. But there is a timeless principle here that applies not just to the news today, but to our own lives as well. When he says the end of all things is at hand, whenever you hear that report, and whenever somebody is saying to you that the ultimate prophetic purpose of God is about to be fulfilled in your own experience, then you are to be sober and watch unto prayer. And what he means by that is to be serious, to keep a sharp eye out for what's going on, and to take things seriously so that you can watch and pray. Be in your right mind. Be sober. That's what that means. So that you can watch and pray. So that you'll know how to pray, so that you'll be able to notice what's going on and be able to interpret it to people around you and have conversations about it with them. And then above all things, you would think that if he's going to say watch and pray, there wouldn't be anything above that, would there? And yet he tells us, above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves. For charity shall cover the multitude of sins. So he's telling us to watch and pray, and then he's telling us to have fervent, serious love for each other. And then use hospitality one to another without grudging. If you were to write down the three things that are identified in the verses that we've just read about what you're supposed to do when a crisis is coming into your life and your world, they're very simple. Pray, love, and serve. Pray, love, and serve. And this business of serving is identified in these words, speak and minister. And we saw those in Sunday school. The way that he wants us to serve is by either using our gifts of speech or the gifts of our hands. And we use those gifts that God has given us and communicate truth to other people in gospel conversation. And the word conversation is very interesting in that sense, that it not only means speech, but it also means manner of living. So however we're living, whatever our testimony is with other people, we are to be communicating the gospel. And when we speak, we are to communicate the gospel. Use those speaking gifts or those hand gifts so that you can have a redemptive influence in the lives of others while you're here on earth. Now, as you listen to these things and you come down to verse 11, if any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God and so on, that God will get all the glory in it. And if you look at those verses and say, well, if praying and loving and speaking and serving, if those are the three things that we're supposed to do, to serve the Lord in some way and to have fellowship with the Lord and fellowship with other people, aren't those the things we're supposed to do all the time? So the crisis of hearing that life as you know it is about to end, that it doesn't just have to be when there's a big crisis. This is the way we're supposed to live as long as we're here on this earth. Our ministry is to bring God's message. The Lord could have taken us to heaven the instant we got saved. But he chose to leave us here. Why? For these things. So that we could tell others about the Lord and live in fellowship with him as an example to others who need to hear the message that has now changed us. God saved our soul, left us here so we can tell others about it. When I began to realize that the gospel message was as simple as it really is, I realized that's why I was put on this earth. I really did. My father was a Methodist preacher. I grew up in a Methodist parsonage. If the door was unlocked, I was inside. That was it. I mean, my brother and I were either cleaning the church or attending the service in the church or something. You know, because the preacher's family is sort of like the church staff in most Methodist churches. And so we just did it all. And we were there. So we had a whole lot of church. And by the time I was in my late teens, I figured I'd filled up all of my quotient for church needs. And I joined the military and didn't go back willingly again thereafter. And so when I came to know what the gospel was all about, and I understood that it was that simple, and put my faith in Christ, it changed everything. Changed everything for me. I had church, but I didn't have Christ when I was growing up. And after I got saved, I wanted to tell other people about it. And so I found myself having conversations with other people about the gospel. And one night I was in the Air Force, and we were working on warplanes, and you had to pay attention. It was dangerous, and I'll tell you some more stories about that maybe during the week. About other people that I had conversations with. But the Lord changed me. He changed me instantly and totally. Now, he didn't totally sanctify me on that very night, but he began a process that continues to this day, I'm thankful to say. But it was like a blind man who was given his sight. That's the closest description I can give you of what happened to me. And so a lot of my habits changed, and a lot of my behaviors changed. And I was involved in a community of guys that were very accomplished at sinning together. And the language that we used, and the places that we went, and the things that we did were not Christ-honoring by any means. But because I had met the Lord, now I was listening to Him. And He was talking to me, and He was speaking to my spirit by His Spirit. And there were things that I was involved in that I knew, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this. I got to stop that. This is not what God wants for my life. Not things that other people had said to me, you should quit that now. You know, Christians don't do that. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm talking about the things that where the Holy Spirit said to me, might want to take a look at this thing that you got going on here in your life and let that go. I mean, the Lord was convicting me about the way I was living my life. And I was the job I had was, you know, I drove what we call the dispatch truck, and I had a crew of guys, and we would go around, fix airplanes and fuel them up and get them armed and all that kind of stuff. And so, and then don't break them before the pilots get out there. You know, that was the rule. And so we were involved in that, and there'd be a lull sometimes in the work. And one of the guys would come up to the truck, and they would ask me a question. They would ask me to help them or to enable them to practice one of their sinful habits or something like that. And I would have to say, I don't do that anymore. Why not? And I thought, well, now what am I going to say? And so I was kind of thrust into a circumstance where witnessing was really not an option for me. Because I had gotten saved while involved in a community of a whole bunch of other guys who weren't saved. And now they're asking me, what has happened to your life? And I'm telling them about what happened to me. About how I came to know Christ. How I heard the gospel. In a conversation, by the way. And now I had put my faith in the Lord. And it was like a blind man who was suddenly given his sight. Therefore, I was constantly giving my testimony of salvation. I hadn't planned to. I didn't know that's what I was supposed to do. But it was the most significant thing that had ever happened to me in my life. And it was all I could talk about. And one night I was talking to a fellow, responding to some of his questions. And he sincerely asked me, what happened to you? And I told him. And it was one of those God-given moments when I had plenty of time and plenty of circumstance to be able to give him my testimony. And everything was quiet. And it was just a perfect opportunity. And I got finished telling him about my testimony of how I had trusted Christ and how the Lord had opened my eyes. And now I was remembering so many things that I had been taught when I was in church and the things from the Bible that my family had given to me. And for the first time in my life, I understood what they meant. And I got finished giving this man my testimony, and he said these words to me. Can I do that? And I said, well, yeah. Well, what do I do? And I said, well, you know, do you believe this? Yeah. You believe this? Yeah. You believe this? Yeah. Believe this? Yeah. Okay, just tell the Lord that you believe it and you want it. I said, that's all I got. That's what I did, you know. And so he said, okay. And he bowed his head and he prayed and he trusted Christ. We got out of the military, he went his way, I went my way. I had loaned him a book. 40 years later, I get a letter from this guy. And he's telling me what's been going on in his life in the 40 years since we've seen each other. And what has been going on in his life is that he got out of the military, went off to Bible college, studied for the ministry, pastored a church for decades. And one day he was going through his library and he found a book that I had loaned him when we were in Thailand. And so he got on the internet and found me and got my address and sent me my book. And said, I've had your book for 40 years and I want to give it back to you because it's yours, it's not mine. And I want to tell you about what the Lord's been doing in my life. What a story! Honestly, I had forgotten all about him. And I figured he'd probably forgotten all about me, too. It's amazing how God will use these conversations and these brief contacts that we have with people to bring about life-changing events through the power of the gospel in people's lives. Well, that's a little bit of my story and what the Lord brought me into and how all this began to work together. I want to share a story with you, Lord willing, one evening this week about a fellow named Gary that I met while we were in Thailand together. I had the pleasure of being with him a couple of months ago and actually staying in his home one night. He lives in Michigan. And all these years that the Lord has kept us in touch with each other. And what a dear, dear brother he is. And how he has encouraged me so much over the years. But we'll share more of that with you a little later on, and in our time here together this week. But I also want to share with you the remarkable way that the Lord allowed my path to cross the paths of other people who just needed to hear the gospel, and the Lord burdened me with learning to communicate the gospel to other people, and that my life since I got saved has been lived as an opportunity to give the testimony of the gospel to other people. So when I talk to you here about gospel conversations, I'm not talking about something that's unnatural. I'm talking about something that's very natural. You know, if you love something, you like to talk about it, don't you? If you love truth, if you love the Bible, if you love Jesus, if you love your church, if you love your Christian friends, those are going to be the topics that occupy your mind and fill your conversation. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about gospel conversations. In this book, my friend Stephen Lee from Sermon Audio encouraged me to write this book, helped me get it published. And so it's got my logo and his on the back of this. And he's promoting it. He asked me to speak on this subject at the conference that he hosted at Bob Jones University called the Foundations Conference. He does that every fall. But and he just wanted me to talk about conversations. And it hadn't really occurred to me that I had sort of become a proponent of gospel conversation just out of the life that God has allowed me to live. And if you're a person who loves meeting new people and engaging them in conversation, if you like to ask people questions about what they do or what their skills are, or what kind of work they do. If you have a genuine interest in other people, and if you're willing to share what God has done in your life and the experiences that you've had and the places that you've been able to go and see and things like that, there's no reason that you can't be more evangelistic than you thought you might. You don't have to struggle and stress yourself to find a way to present the gospel to people. And I won't ask for a show of hands here, but I suspect there are some people here in their service today. You've really wanted to be a witness. You've really wanted to give the gospel to other people. You'd love to see some people saved through your testimony and your influence in their lives. And maybe you have practiced various ways of sharing the gospel with other people. I would appeal to you today to simply have conversations with people about the gospel. Have conversations with people about Jesus and about what he has done for you and what he wants to do through you in the lives of other people. It's really quite simple. And as we talk about these gospel conversations and some of the things that we're going to be learning about them, I want you to realize that if you know a little bit about the Bible, and if you've memorized some scriptures, and you've got a few things available to you, and you're ready and available to be used of God, he will give you opportunities you might never, ever have imagined. And I'll share a few of those with you. My first gospel conversation that I want to talk to you about took place on an airplane. I mentioned this in Sunday school. I'm an airplane evangelist. I like to talk to people. I like to talk to strangers. I like to get to know people. And I got on an airplane one time. Actually, I was flying from Philadelphia to Charlotte on an airline which is now sold to some other airline. But I flew on the all the time, and I got on the plane, and I rushed in there. I was coming from a preaching meeting or something, and I looked at my seat, and my seat was partially occupied. The seat next to my seat was completely occupied. And the guy that was occupying that seat was also the one who was partially occupying my seat, because he was totally involved in sleeping in an airplane. And there wasn't enough room for him to do that in his own seat, so he was just kind of sprawled out in my place too. And I thought, well, what do I do here? Do I wake this guy up? You know, I thought maybe I could just kind of slide in here next day, get in my seat and buckle up, and maybe when we take off, he'll wake up and scoot over. You know, I didn't want to be rude. I mean, he was sort of being rude, but I didn't want to be rude back. You know what I mean? And so I sat down, and somehow we got airborne, and he was still in dreamland. And I thought, this guy must be exhausted. He just must be exhausted. And I thought, you know, I can give him a little rest. I've been in that situation. I'll just not make an issue out of it. And so we flew. And he was a big fella. And so finally I was thinking, Lord, I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to give him the gospel. I'd love to give him a word of witness, give him a gospel tract or something. I don't want to just put it in his pocket while he's sleeping. But just, Lord, work it out for me. And so we did the whole flight. And we're almost to Charlotte. And I haven't been able to say a word to the man. And so I'm thinking, Lord, you know, I'll witness to him. You have to wake him up. So couldn't you awaken him? I'm not that kind of person. I really know. And so the lady starts talking to us. We're coming in and making our final approach, you know, collect all your things and put your stuff away. You know how they do. If you've ever flown on a plane, there's all that. We're getting ready to land, so brace yourself. Let's do what we got to do. And so people start stirring around. They're turning the lights on and moving about. And so he starts to stir a little bit. And he's waking up. And he looks over and he sees that he's leaning into my space. And he says, oh, hey, sorry. I said, hey, it's okay. I hope you got some rest. It was obvious to me that you were really tired. Yeah. And I have a little way I can get it into some conversation and start things up. And so I used that. I said, so are you coming home, or are you headed out? And people don't mind that question. And so he said, oh, I'm coming home. And I said, oh, been out of business? No, I do. I do fly out to on business, but not this time. I said, oh, okay. And he said, I've been to my dad's funeral. I thought, oh, Lord, I know why you put me here. Been to my dad's funeral. And I said, oh, man, that hurts. I said, were you close? He said, not so much in recent years. You know, I had my work and my job and, you know, he had his life. And I didn't get to see him. I mean, you never think about it at the time until all of a sudden your opportunity is gone. And I've been thinking an awful lot in the last few days about what I wished I'd done. And I thought, this is a real human being here with real human problems. And this is where, you know, all of us either have been or soon will be with somebody that we know and love in our lives. And I was thinking, Lord, give me an opportunity. I mean, by this time, things are slowing down. They're buttoning up. And I realize I don't have much time at all to get to the point with this man. And then he said to me, as he reached inside his shirt and pulled out this big silver medallion on a heavy silver chain. It was a rough carved medallion. And he said, he left me something. And he pulled that medallion out and he showed it to me. And on that medallion, there was a figure of an old bearded man wearing a long robe and a long beard. And he was holding a staff up like this. And there were two small figures in front of that large figure, and a little boy and a little girl. And they too were wearing robes, and they were looking at this man and this staff that he was holding up. And wrapped around that staff that figure on that medallion was holding up was a serpent. And he said, I think it's from the Bible. And I said, would you like to hear the story? And yes, he did want to hear the story. And you know the story, don't you? It's in John chapter 3. It tells us there, Jesus is speaking to Nicodemus. And he says, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. And he gives him the gospel in these next few verses, verse 14 of John 3. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. I don't have to tell you what the next verse is, do I? That most convenient, most common, most powerful, most often quoted, most well known of all verses in the Bible. This man was given by his father a medallion which depicts this verse, and he was holding it in his hand. And I was asking God to give me an opportunity to efficiently and quickly give him the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it's as though that fellow said, here it is right here. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. I realized that day on that plane that if I would be ready to speak for God, God would see to it that there were people who were ready to listen to God that he would put in my path.
all that other business about me letting him sleep while we were on the plane, and then him waking up at the opportune moment and showing me this medallion that he had received as the gift that his father left him at his death. Clearly, it was like the whole event of my trip, this man's trip, the funeral, everything, the seats side by side, it was as though the Lord just opened it up and said, here you go. Perfect opportunity. Be faithful, speak for me, and you won't have to wonder where the opportunities are going to come from. And I gave him the gospel in about 2 minutes. And then we landed and he collected his things and he had to go. And I did give him a gospel tract that had my name and my address on it and a testimony that I wanted to share with him. I've never seen him since. I don't know if he got saved. I don't know if he put his faith in Jesus Christ. I do know that God had me where he wanted me to be, and he gave me an opportunity to give the gospel to a man. And it has been occurring to me over the years that God knows exactly what he's doing when he's working to bring a man to himself. It's pretty arrogant of us to believe that if we don't do it, it won't get done. We should do what God has enabled us and given us the opportunity to do. But God has likely an entire train of people all lined up on the track. I suspect, look, that man's father, why would he have purchased that medallion? Where did he get it? I don't know. But I know that this man had a medallion which was a precious treasure to him that had the gospel etched in it graphically from the Old Testament and the passage from John 3. I wondered if that man's father had gotten his hands on that medallion as an opportunity to have conversations with other people about John 3. I mean, certainly the man that etched that thing into silver had that in mind. Somehow the Lord had brought this whole thing together so that this man that I was sitting beside had his hands on a picture of the gospel at the opportune moment. And then he put me beside the man on this flight at one of the most tender times of his life, right after he's just buried his father and feeling guilty and awful for having neglected that relationship in the last several years of his life. And here I am, a preacher, out on a trip to preach the gospel, and the Lord sat me down right beside the man that needed me at that moment. He didn't need me, he needed my message. You understand what I'm saying? And because God orchestrated this whole thing and put it all together. Now, I would love to be able to say to you that I led him in prayer and he prayed the sinner's prayer and that we've kept in touch over the years. But that's not true. We didn't have that opportunity. We didn't get that far. But he's thought about it and he's kept that silver medallion for whatever length of time he has. And every time he's put his hands on it, he's remembered what it means. And that wasn't work I did. That was work his father did. God just allowed me to sort of speak for his father after the father was gone to help this son realize the significance, not just the value of the silver or the craftsmanship of the emblem that was the image that was carved into that silver, but the message. The message that Jesus spoke in John 3, the most well-known verse in the Bible that anybody who's ever been to church or ever been to summer vacation Bible school or ever been to Sunday school, John 3:16. That anybody who knows anything about Christianity knows John 3:16, you would think. Now, I'm sure there are some that don't, but nevertheless, here was this man. And it dawned on me that day, and as I've reflected on it in the years since then, that God uses each of us at the opportune moment. Sometimes we completely miss those opportune moments. Sometimes if we're ready for them, God will send them our way. And my whole point in writing this book about gospel conversations and in talking to you about it today is to help you realize that God will use you effectively and fruitfully if you'll be faithful with the opportunities that he gives you. Do what you can, when you can, where you can, if you can, with whomever you can, to be involved in getting the gospel into your conversations with other people. And I don't mean to denigrate or minimize the value of any emphasis that anybody else has on presenting the gospel. One of my dearest friends on earth is Jeff Musgrave. He has built his entire ministry around a ministry he calls The Exchange. He had a very successful church. He was doing a great job, planted that church, got it strong, got it into a building, was there for quite a few years. But he was so burdened for personal evangelism, and he developed this method called The Exchange, where it's just Jesus wants us to take his place, so he takes our place. I mean, that's basically it. He gets on the cross for us, and we can go and have the blessings of heaven through him. Simple presentation of the gospel. Very, very effective presentation. I thank the Lord for him. And there are a number of other people that I know that have methods and means and ways of presenting the gospel very much, very effective. And I'm not suggesting that I have something better than any of them. I don't. But I am saying that everybody that can speak or write should be looking for opportunities to have gospel conversations. Just talk about the Lord. And you don't have to tie yourself in a knot in order to do that. I know men particularly, but people, mostly men, who love to talk about sports. They know the names of the players. They know the names of the teams. They know who can play and who can't. They know who the coaches are. They know the scores. They know who they're going to play next. They know who's going to win the conference or the competitions or whatever. You know, and I am sports illiterate. I just don't have that kind of exposure to it and knowledge of it. I couldn't play sports except in recess when I was in grade school. If you had, you know, a ball glove, you got to play. And so, I mean, that's the way it worked. But that was it for me. I admire guys who can do that. But I have also noticed something about those guys. They're not wrestling with themselves about how they're going to get the conversation on the subject they love. It doesn't take much for them to start talking about sports or the game last night or who's playing this weekend or who's the coach of whatever. I mean, it's natural. It just flows out of them. Why do you suppose? I think I know. I think it's easy for them to have conversations about that because they love it. They love it. They love the information. They love the game. They love to watch. They love to see it. And maybe they're living vicariously through it or something like that. You know, I don't know. But they love it. And that's what they like to talk about. And they can identify with other people. And they can connect to them. Well, how come it's not easier for Christian people to have conversations about the Lord? You see? Look, if you love him, you're going to talk about him. It doesn't take too many people slapping you down to discourage you, though. I understand that. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can have a gospel conversation with somebody, and they can respond in a way that will encourage you to keep going back and keep talking to him. That's the fellow that led me to the Lord. That's what he did. I'll tell you about him a little bit more later this week. I was moved into a barracks that was right next to the USO building And I was an NCO, but they put me in there with the airmen because there was a lot of drugs, and they wanted somebody who was going to kind of tamp that down. And so I was like in there to spy on everybody else, okay, and make these guys behave. And so there was. And I would go over to the USO next door and write home every day. And I was sitting there at the table one day, and I looked up, and this guy is sitting at a table across from me, and he's staring at me. And I nodded, you know, that little nod you give. And I looked up again, and he was still staring at me. And I thought, what is this guy's problem? You know, what do you, I thought, I got to go speak to him or something and find out what's going on. And so I got up to get a cup of coffee, and when I came back from the coffee pot, I walked by his place there at the table, and he was reading a book, and I thought, well, that's interesting. And I said, what are you reading? As soon as he told me, I thought, oh, I asked for this. He was reading the Bible. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, do you ever read the Bible? That was the conversation. And I, well, you know, I am familiar with it. And so we got into this conversation talking about the Bible. And the next thing, you know, and so he asked me just right out, are you a Christian? I lied and said, yeah, my dad's a preacher. That wasn't a lie. That was true. But I didn't really claim to be a Christian, and I didn't really want to be. I was just using the whole thing as an excuse, a way of getting out of it, you know. And so the next day, same situation, I was under such conviction. I went by and I said, you know, yesterday you asked me a question. You asked me if I was a Christian, and I said yes. The truth is, no, I'm not. I'm not, and I don't want to be. But I shouldn't lie to you about it. I should at least be honest about the fact. And he didn't jump on me. He didn't rebuke me. He didn't make a big deal out of it. He just said, oh, okay. I said, my dad was a preacher, and I had told him that. He said, do you know anything about Romans? And I said, yeah, a little bit. You know, I know where it is. He said, I've been studying, and I got stumped here. I don't know where to go from here. And he wasn't manipulating me. He was serious. He really was serious. And he said, can I show you this? And I said, well, yeah. He wasn't trying to trick me. He had a legitimate question to which I did not know the answer. But we sat down and we talked about it for a little while. And we made friends. And I asked him about his family. And you got any kids? Yeah, two. Really? What do you got? Well, I got this girl and I got this other girl. I've never met her. And I said, how come? He said, she was born after I came over here. And I thought, wow, that's no fun. And so we sort of hit it off. And we became friends. And he would check on me and I would check on him. And didn't work in the same shop. I worked on one part of the airplane. He worked on another part of the airplane. He was just so friendly. So I'd go over to the USO and I'd look around and see if he was there. And if we could see each other, we'd close the gap and have a talk. Build on our conversations. And it wasn't long before he set up a circumstance in which I came to the Lord. I'll tell you more about that later. But my point is, God used a simple circumstance with a simple conversation to start showing me an interest in things that I had been avoiding all my life. I'd been in church. I went because my dad was a pastor and I didn't have any choice. I had to stay awake because, you know, well, dad was watching, okay? And we were going to talk about it when we got home. But this business of gospel conversation was something that had never really occurred to me, even after I met Gary and we had that conversation. It was after I'd been in the ministry for several years when I began to realize that the Lord was leading in all these meetings and all these circumstances where I was making contact with people and presenting the gospel to them. Pastor mentioned another book that we wrote some years ago that was widely received about an unusual experience that we had in our home. and that nearly claimed the lives of two of my family members. And so we wrote this book, and it was very well received, and it was on the radio, like, worldwide. And so we talked about that all the time. And I helped my daughter write a gospel tract about her experience. And we have published and distributed over 1 million copies of that gospel tract. And it's really easy to pass out a gospel tract, especially when it's about a personal experience. But oftentimes, there have been times when I've passed out gospel tracts as a substitute for having a conversation. And sometimes I had this idea that I was almost like, here you go, take that and go away. I never really consciously thought that. But sometimes there were times when I just didn't go into it because I didn't have time. There were other times when I didn't say anything because I didn't have time to enter into a deep conversation with somebody. And I wonder, honestly, how many opportunities I have missed to be the next guy to talk to somebody. And there's some other guy coming behind me because I had this attitude that I can't engage in a partial gospel conversation. Well, if you haven't figured it out by now, I don't believe that anymore. I believe that we should do what we can, when we can, if we can. And let God be God. And He's the one who's in charge of getting the gospel to this person. And I've heard too much preaching in my life from preachers who are putting people on guilt trips because they do not grab somebody by the lapel and give them the gospel and demand a response. Pastor and I were talking about this during the break, where he was out on visitation with a guy and they were watching a little league ball game, and the guy he was with was trying to give the gospel to the coach during the game. You know? Maybe if that was an open door, who am I? But, you know, common sense will give us a lot of guidance, don't you think? Well, folks, I want you to think about this. I want you to think about it throughout the day. I want you to think about it. Maybe come back tonight, and maybe the Lord make it possible for you to come back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night. We're going to talk about some more gospel conversations. We're going to talk about how you can engage in some gospel conversations. And I want you to be thinking about opportunities that you've had to have a conversation with somebody about the gospel. And I want to encourage you to keep doing that. And though you may have to say, well, you know, he didn't get saved, or I'm not sure he got saved, I won't ask for a show of hands. I know there are people in this room. You'd love to talk about how God lets you talk to somebody about the Lord, but you know you didn't get them to pray with you, and therefore you can't really count that one. And so you don't talk about that one very much, because somebody's going to say, well, did they get saved? You know? If somebody's sharing with you a gospel conversation they had, you would be doing them a great service if you wouldn't press them. Did they get saved? Because what are they supposed to say if no, they didn't get saved right then? As though it were entirely up to them. If I were you, I would encourage you to engage in a gospel conversation, go as far as you can with somebody on the right road, and if they don't make a decision that day, don't let that defeat you. Don't let that discourage you. If you can give them the gospel and invite them to pray with you, do it. But if you don't get that opportunity, don't avoid it. But if you don't get that opportunity, don't give up. Do what you can, when you can, with whom you can. And if you'll be faithful, it won't be long until the Lord's going to bring somebody along your path that will be ready. And maybe you're one of the ones that He's going to use to get them ready for somebody else. Does that make sense? Now, you may think that I'm discouraging people from witnessing. I hope you don't think that. And I hope and pray that's not what I'm doing, but I don't think it is. I think what we're doing here is we're trying to be reasonable and patient and realize it's up to God. It's not up to us. Soul winning is not about how good we are as gospel salesmen. It's about how good our God is that we're telling them about. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the attentiveness of these dear people and for the things that you've put on our minds this morning. And I pray that you'd help me to stay focused and share some stories and some biblical principles and truths with them while I'm here, so that more and more of the people...